You're listening to the Jay's Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Shapiro. And on tonight's show, we've got Dow of Steve from Rogers Sportsnet, Jeff Falbo from Deep Leagues, and Chris Henderson from jaysjournal.com, the site expert. We're going to be talking about the Blue Jays and how the team is starting to become maybe a harbinger of good things to come for suffering fans who are looking at the performance and gradual development of players like Richard Urania, Teoscar Hernandez, Carlos Ramirez, and what will soon be a plethora, I'm sure, of other players that will be brought up during this month to be given the opportunity to set some expectations for next year. And again, let's reinforce my continuing narrative, if you will, when it comes to what I think the Blue Jays front office should do, which is invest in their 2018 year to create a bridge to the 2019 reality that will be Vlad Guerrero Jr., Bo Bichette, and a host of other top-flight prospects who are probably 1 to 2 years away. But more importantly, fans need to be given a certain reassurance in appreciating what the leadership group of this team can do, both from an executive management standpoint, on-field coaching, and of course, leading by example on the field with your veteran leaders such as Josh Donaldson, Russell Martin, and Troy Tulowitzki. So needless to say, these next few weeks are important. They're important because you should be paying attention. You should be appreciating what this franchise is showcasing as the promise of then taking your hard-earned dollars, taking whatever disposable income you put aside for baseball, and rewarding it with exciting, spontaneous, credible, competitive baseball, capable of keeping your imagination running wild and indulging in the escapism, if you will, that baseball is really all about. So without further delay, let's get to a round table. And as mentioned, I've got three incredibly prodigious and brilliant baseball minds. On the show with me for the round table today is Jeff Falbo from deepleagues.com, the site expert of Jay's Journal. We've got Chris Henderson with us. And of course, one of my favorite guests from Sportsnet, he's a contributor and author, a writer and blogger, Dow of Steve. Gentlemen, it's a pleasure having all three of you here. I want to start with you, Dow. Let's talk about the last few days of watching Blue Jays baseball, which I think you'll agree has been a bit of a novelty for us as fans this year. We're witnessing timely hitting. We're witnessing fantastic outfield defense. We're witnessing pitching performances that have poise and fortitude. Where was this before, and is this simply a product of getting the opportunity to see good young players finally get their chance instead of some of these underachieving, highly paid schmucks?
Schmucks. Well, I don't know. I mean, in a long season, you have certain little runs that are better than others, and I mean, this year hasn't had very many of them stitched together, so... The longest win streak for the Blue Jays this year is 5 games. So, I mean, I guess now we're on streak watch for the Blue Jays. I think that there's a little bit of this, which is having some players come in and play well in their first shot. Some of it's getting some people into the lineup or having a little bit of added flexibility with the lineup. I don't know. I mean, this is just one of those little streaks that happens, and I guess you're grateful to have some decent baseball played and something that's somewhat enjoyable. But certainly, I think that it's been a breath of fresh air to see Teoscar Hernandez and Richard Urania as part of the team over the last little bit, and. You know, I don't think that we have to get too carried away with who they are and what they're going to be, but it's fun. And baseball's supposed to be fun, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head for me with a few of those things. You look at those two young guys in particular, and, you know, there's some pressure, just because they're getting to the highest level for the first time. But in the same breath, it's also the expectations. They're not jumping into a team in the middle of a pennant race and trying to make an impact. And so these guys are getting an opportunity to play some pretty low pressure baseball where, with all due respect to the veteran players on the roster, the bar has been set pretty low. So, I mean, they come in and they just kind of do their thing. You know, I always mispronounce his name, Urania. You know, somebody please correct me so I'm not that guy. But, He's hitting better at the major league level than he did in Double A this year, and he's playing outstanding defense. And you can just see the excitement in the guy, both in the dugout and on the field in the batter's box. It's just refreshing. It's nice to see some energy.
Yeah, I too. I also get a little bit nervous watching games at the end of the year. It's it's hope, yes, for next year, but it's also false hope because you say, oh, don't worry, the kids are going to be here next year, and now we're going to compete. But I think this team still needs a lot of changes. The outfield needs to be revamped, and but it is nice to see some kids, especially the relief pitchers. Ramirez, I think his name is. The guy hasn't let in a run all year, and he's been lights out in the major league as well.
Jeff, is there something to be called from recognizing a team that will fail to ever reach 500 during the course of the entire regular season? I was just thinking about that the other day. There were several efforts. I think they went a grand total of 0-9, the Blue Jays did, in their effort to get back to 500. What does it say that they were struggling with such inconsistency that we as fans would then turn around and say, hey, 2018 sounds great. These young players look like they may pan out. It looks like management's going to support this team, even though they're asking us to spend more money on the team. Are you buying into the notion that the Blue Jays will be competitive with the pieces they have for 2018?
Well, I don't know. With an 18% ticket hike, they better be increasing their payroll and the team. I don't know. I think you still have an old team. You still have a slow team. The Jays, it's going to be tough to get out of contracts like Tulowitzki. I know there's been some rumbling about some people not liking Morales and his speed on the bases as well. I don't know. You can't influx your lineup with a bunch of rookies and then expect amazing results either.
As we've talked about this kind of question this topic throughout the season, it's amazing how many times I've kind of flip-flopped back and forth. And the more that I look at the 2018 season, the more, to me, it hinges. First and foremost, for me, it hinges on the starting rotation. You know, if we can get anything from Aaron Sanchez, we didn't get anything, unfortunately, from him this year with the finger and nail and the blister issues, and now he's got a ligament issue in the finger as well. You know, if that guy can come back and be a Cy Young contender like we thought he would be this year, then that makes a tremendous impact. We can re-sign Marco Estrada and have him perform, closer to what we expected from him this year as well. The rotation's in great shape when you start talking about pieces with four guys, so those two in addition to Happ and Stroman. The more Happ throws this year, the more I've enjoyed watching him and the more faith I have in him as well. And then, of course, they have to make decisions on Josh Donaldson, whether or not they want to explore trading him. And as you said, Jeff, there are some holes that still need to be filled. And I think Urena, and again, I hope I'm not mispronouncing that, but I think the exciting thing about him is that he's providing a bit more depth in the middle infield. And that's something that obviously this team is going to need.
I think that you've definitely touched on something that would be important to me for next year, which is the starting rotation and getting more out of Aaron Sanchez. I think that's a real key. And if not Aaron Sanchez, then getting decent performances from the starters. A big part of what this season has been about has been even some of their better pitchers kind of five and diving for extended periods during this year. And then, leaving them with the bullpen that if they haven't pitched the most innings in baseball, they're within the top three for sure. If you don't have starting pitching that's of a sufficient quality, then what you end up with is a lot of sort of subsequent problems of, an offense that then has to chase after the game and a bullpen that has to try and patch over way too many innings. So, that's going to be an important part. Is this the team that is going to compete in 2018? I don't think it is, but I think that we have to wait to see what it is that gets added in this offseason. I think that they're probably not going to find themselves at the top of the heap in terms of chasing free agents, but it wouldn't surprise me to see them go after someone who is maybe a bit, not necessarily a sneaky pick, but someone who's maybe not amongst the top of the class, or potentially taking somebody's expensive contract and eating it. That's really where potentially the having some financial heft here could serve this team well, which is to go and to either eat a contract or, frankly, to eat one of their own, such as Tulo, and to move on from that.
All right, just one added note. This outfield that the Blue Jays have, I think this year's tandem, this group, has had to have been one of the worst offensive outputs I've seen in years. It's been a merry-go-round in left field. I mean, Pilar started on fire and then has just tailed off for 3 months and has come back a little bit. And while Batista's flirting with the Mendoza line all year, I mean, the outfield really needs to be upgraded. There's very limited power coming from the outfield, and just the consistency of defenses needs to be improved. I think it's one of the worst in the league.
I think you're onto something there, because without the expectations of power and offense that they were supposed to bring, the original threesome that ultimately turned into, like you said, Kevin Pillar and company, I mean, Bautista, I'm not going to slag him again. I've done that on the last few shows, and I'm sure Dow's smiling because he knows he's a favorite whipping boy. He has to be. He's got 200, 300, 400 splits that you look at and you say to yourself, wow, that's $18 million in the twilight of your career. It's a really sad story. But Chris, I'm wondering, when you look at this outfield and when you look at the arrival of someone like a Teoscar Hernandez, I guess you really can't blame fans for getting too excited at the prospect of whether it's Hernandez as well as Alford. I mean, I'm hearing a lot of Anthony Alford Twitter chatter going on now in anticipation that hopefully he will be the cure that makes this outfield legitimate in 2018.
Yeah, and I think fans have a lot of reason to be excited about those guys. You know, Alford in particular, I think, has an even higher ceiling than Hernandez. But I think what always makes me laugh on Twitter, and I get caught up in this once in a while too, is that, you know, people are so want to move on from the struggling veterans and hand the reins over to these young prospects. But, you know, those are the same people that aren't going to have a lot of patience when Anthony Alford is striking out a lot, at, you know, at a unfortunate clip for a young player. I'm not saying that he necessarily for sure will, but, you know, it takes time for these young guys to adjust to the big league game. And while Hernandez has played well since he's been called up, we can't expect this kind of consistent play across 162 games next year from him. And if we get it, then that's a tremendous bonus, and we're very fortunate. But I don't think, you know, fans, if they want the team to compete in 2018, which most of them do, they have to both have realistic expectations for the young guys and also understand that, you know, a guy like Alford may need some more time as well before he's ready to be a star or, you know, a real plus asset for the team. So it's more than understandable. I mean, the defense has been poor from Bautista, Pearson and company in the outfield corners, and even Pilar's metrics are down. And then when you talk about the offensive numbers outside of Pierce, it hasn't been great from there either. So I don't blame them for wanting a change, but having the young guys in there full-time next year might not necessarily be an improvement for 2018. It will in the long run, I believe, but people need that patience.
I think that what both Alford and Teoscar can add to this team, frankly, is something, and I don't know if this is the dog or the rabbit here for Kevin Pillar, but, you know, someone to either spur him to get more focused on playing better, or someone who can just basically catch up to him and move past him. You know, I think that's going to be a big part of the story next year. Kevin Pillar is moving to a point of his career where, you know, in arbitration, he's going to start to get more expensive. And what are the Blue Jays going to get out of him? I mean, tremendous defense for sure, but they need for him to be better at the plate than he has been. And he's kind of running out of rope, I think, at this point. So, you know, I think that there is room for improvement with the Blue Jays outfield. I think that potentially you could find yourself a pretty decent right fielder. And maybe, you know, they go back to the well with someone like Jay Bruce. Looking at him as a guy who could come in and at least play a really good offensive role for them as a as an outfielder. Or, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of guys. I mean, outfielders, you know, it's not like you're talking about shortstops or catchers where finding, you know, offensive performers is really difficult. So, you know, I mean, I feel like they can be better than they have been this year. They're third from the bottom in the major leagues in terms of weighted on base, weighted runs created plus the outfielders for Toronto. They're third from the bottom in the league. So, you know, I mean, there's nowhere to go but up. But I guess the trick is, you know, how do they get there?
And the Jays don't need to spend a lot. They just need a consistent hitter, guy who's going to hit 280. Doesn't necessarily need power. Just needs to get on base on a consistent basis. Have a little bit of speed on the bases. I mean, those guys aren't terribly expensive. And fortunately, corner outfield are the easiest players to get. I just don't want to see Band-Aid solutions. I don't want to see the Jays say, oh, let's think about moving Devin Travis into one of the corner outfields and let Teoscar Hernandez, you know, rotate with another outfielder. And then it's Band-Aid solutions all over again. Let's get some consistency in the outfield, and let's get a guy who can actually hit the ball and get on base.
Yeah, and you know, and to further this stuff too, that's how, going back to you talking about the role that they can play in pushing Pillar, I completely agree. And I think next year we've got a situation where Pillar will be the starting center fielder at the beginning of the year. Steve Pierce is going to be in left field on a consistent basis. And, you know, Teoscar Hernandez is going to be competing for that right field job. Where I'd like to see Alfred, his biggest role next year is that if Pillar, like, you know, be on Pillar's footsteps, just like you said, and if he can handle it, then maybe by midseason, and if the season, if the team isn't where they want to be, then it's the time for to move on, because as you said, the arbitration years are approaching, and it's things are definitely changing.
You know, I've watched Anthony Alford. We all have, all four of us, I think it's safe to say, are very active in our understanding of prospects and how they develop. In particular, I know, Jeff, you have always been an admirer of Anthony Alford. I think that when you hit I think that when a center fielder hits 194 for 60 days, then Anthony Alford shouldn't have a problem being the dog and the rabbit, quite frankly, Dow. My question to you is, we talked about speed. Shouldn't that really be a priority for this team when you consider that they're the worst team for grounding into double plays, they're the worst team for stealing bases, they're one of the worst teams in doubles because they have guys who literally can't leg out extra base hits. Shouldn't that really be, if you were the GM, your number one priority to make this team more exciting, dynamic, and spontaneous for fans who can appreciate the multidimensionality of baseball that's largely ignored in Toronto?
So definitely, I think that speed is something that they have to look at, and certainly as they're adding in whoever is coming in to I guess supplement the players who are in place now, you know, you have to think that is a priority. And you're right. I mean, this is a team whose slowness kind of compounds on itself. You know, I mean, it'd be one thing if it was just Kendrys Morales, but the fact that it's Bautista, followed by Morales, followed by Smoke, followed by Steve Pierce. I really dislike the notion of hit and run and some of that sort of small ball type approach to baseball. But I do think that you have to have guys who can get from first to third on a base hit, or guys who can at least get down the line and make get infield hits or stay out of double plays or whatever it is. I guess the challenge with that though is, how are you going to do that? Are you going to get like one stupendously fast guy like a Jerrod Dyson, and then like what do you do with him? Like, you can't put him into the lineup at random or just after somebody else has got on base necessarily. So, you know, I mean, there are guys like Dyson who's on the market next year. I mean, Rajai Davis is a guy who who I think might have some sort of a fit here. But, you know, again, we're getting into these crowded left field, right field spots. And, you know, I guess if you think that this team needs to add athleticism, part of how they're going to have to add it is by subtraction.
That was, it's funny because we talked all off season prior to the part of this season's beginning that the team needed a more well-rounded approach, and that was what was missing in the playoffs, in particular in 2015 and 16. And you know, while circumstances didn't allow for the Jays pursued guys like Dexter Fowler trying to become more well-rounded, and in the end they signed you know, brought back Bautista and brought in Steve Pierce and brought in Kendrys Morales, so we kind of went backwards that way. And you know, not to say that that's the reason for the team, you know, for the season going the way it has, but it certainly compounds the issue. And like you say, when there is really a lack of speed in the lineup altogether outside of Kevin Pillar, I mean, Donald Cimley's healthy, runs okay for a third baseman. But beyond that, I mean, everybody else is average or below average. So when you're struggling to see OBP issues and then, you know, you see a bounding ball that could be an infield hit and there's still three strides left before Morales gets there, it just makes you shake your head. Eventually, the more double plays and the more opportunities you see blown because of the lack of speed.
Yeah, I mean, there's that old scouting theory. You pay for power, but you develop athleticism and speed. And I think the speed is coming through the system. I think Alfred's still a year away, so he might be the ultimate solution, but he's not the answer for next year. I don't know. I think just team speed all around and athleticism. I mean, this team is still a power team, a power-hitting team that's just not hitting for power, and it's showing. So we'll have to wait and see.
And that's a really good point, though, I think. You're right. Like, if you're a team that's built for power, and, you know, to some extent, that's what Cleveland is this year, and they've gone on the streak where they've just been bashing the ball. Now, mind you, bashing the ball against the White Sox and the Tigers. So, you know, excuse my skepticism on that level. But you know, that's the thing about power is that if you're crushing homers like the Blue Jays did in 2015, then it's great. And and to be honest, I think that I would in some ways rather see them just go whole hog on trying to up the power that this team has as opposed to trying to go through and add speed here or there, or guys on the bench maybe who can pinch hit or what have you. I don't know. The one thing though that I'll also say though is that with Alfred and Teoscar you know, I think one of the things that this team is going to finally start to have that they haven't had for the last few years is some depth at AAA. And some guys who they can park in AAA, and if they need to move them up because of injury, because of underperformance, or whatever it is, that they're going to have a little bit of extra cushion there. Whereas, you know, I mean, how many weeks did we spend pining for Jason Leblebesian this year? You know, like I mean, I learned how to spell the man's name. That's how long we were sitting around waiting for him to get called up. And, you know, I mean, and you know, this goes back a few years with these sort of these guys who are like very marginal at best. I think that there's a little something out there that's a bit more enticing and something to have some more optimism about that's sitting right there as the next wave in behind whoever it is that they have on the 25 man on March 29th.
Yeah, and, you know, I like what you said, you know, about having the depth with Hernandez, because I as I was kind of saying earlier, I caution fans to expect him to be one of the big three outfielders next year on a competing team. I think he's certainly worth giving a chance to start, but it all depends on the philosophy the team kind of wants to enter the year with. So in an ideal scenario, maybe you do have a veteran, you know, talk about Jay Bruce, or maybe a Melky Cabrera is going to be a free agent. Maybe he's a contact hitter type that you could bring in, you know, and if any of those outfielders were to deal with injury, Hernandez is the first guy called up, or maybe he's the fourth outfielder that plays three, four, or five times a week. Well, five's a bit much for a fourth outfielder, but you know, it's I think it's a lot of pressure to put on them if they intend to compete next year.
Quite frankly, I don't care who they get, as long as it's a guy that can hit close to 300. I mean, how scary is this?
Well, easier said than done.
It's almost, yeah, well, I mean, if we said at the beginning of the year Justin Smoke was the only guy that was going to hit close to 300 throughout the whole year, but, I mean, the rest of the lineup isn't even hitting close to 300. I mean, it's just...
Let me ask you this, Jeff, and just to play devil's advocate, would you rather have seen Ezequiel Carrera in the lineup full-time this year? Because, you know, he's been hitting closer, better than average-wise than most people. Because I personally...
Well, his defense is
I know
is
some
terrible.
People have been asking for him. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more.
Do you know how many guys hit 300 in Major League Baseball this year?
This year has been
as
terrible.
As of today, there's 28 players who have hit 300 this year.
Wow.
So, you know, I wonder, and I don't know, maybe I can bore everybody by going back in single seasons in the past, but it just, I think hitting 300 is not the same thing that it meant, you know, back in 1988 when, you know, Tony Fernandez was doing it or what have you. Someone's going to double check this and see that Tony hit like 279 that year. But anyways, whatever. my point, though, being that like it is a way that the game has changed that, you know, you have these guys who have these 265, 275 batting averages, but then, you know, high 300 to low 400 OBP. And guys are just willing to give up a certain number of outs, you know, in favor of cranking balls. And I guess, you know, that was one of the things that struck me about the game against Baltimore, where they had the walk-off win in the ninth inning, but they crushed about eight balls to the warning track. And it feels like that's so often the thing with the Blue Jays this year. They're hitting all these balls to the warning track and none of them are getting to the other side of the fence. So maybe the big thing that Rogers and the Blue Jays can do is take the fence, lower it down to 7 feet and move it in about 3 feet all around. And then they'll be cooking with fire next year.
Or as my buddies always tell me when I do the same thing, one more workout, bud, one more workout.
Well, and for the record, you did choose the 1 year where Tony hit under 300. He hit 287 and 88.
Yeah,
I
322.
I knew
before.
That, but I needed to check because, you know, unless Google validates my suspicion, it's all, you know, all fact. But anyways, it's interesting to note that, and Jeff, you mentioned this earlier, so I'm going to ask you to start. Is it too much to ask for depth? I mean, wasn't that really the Achilles heel of this entire season, that as the injuries began to pile up and have now reached a record pace, because I think they now had 26 or 27 different players on the DL, how can you expect the fan base to buy into a competitive team that ends up putting in the Luke Maleys and the Rob Refsniders of the world, players that clearly would never see the light of day in a major league franchise if not for the fact that you've been caught completely flat-footed and don't have any depth?
I think this all starts from a philosophy that Alex Anthopoulos' his regime had, and they drafted primarily pitching. And
yeah.
I remember there was through when I was with deepleagues.com, we reviewed a lot of times their first 10 rounds. I think 9 of their top 10 picks would all be pitchers. And they had a philosophy of, hey, it's harder to attract and more expensive to attract free agent pitchers, so we better start developing our own. And so they continued to draft pitchers and pitchers and pitchers. So the Jays had very little depth in their system as far as position players, and I think that philosophy is starting to catch up with the Jays. There aren't too many position players within the organization that, I mean, outside of the 19, 20-year-olds, you know, and then Dunedin and Lansing this year, I mean, they can say, okay, well, this guy's a year away, or this guy, you know, he can be that 4A guy. He can play sometime in the major leagues and half the year in AAA. But the Jays just they don't have that depth within the farm system, and they certainly don't have the deep pockets to go out and purchase quality guys that are going to sit on the bench.
Yeah, the part of that I would agree with is that there wasn't a pile of developed depth in AAA. But you know, you're right. We are seeing a resurgence in the system now. There's, you know, I personally think that the Jays are starting to become one of the stronger position player systems. But it's a lot of it's in the lower rungs, and it's not just the Vladimir Guerreros and the Bo Bichettes. You know, there's other guys out there too. The Edward Alvarezes and the Bradley Joneses and the Danny Jansens that I think are all going to be great major league players, or at least serviceable major league players. But I do agree with you. There was a few years where their focus was definitely on pitching. But, you know, I remember Fantopoulos talking about having a glut of pitching is never a bad thing either, because, you know, it allows you to make some trades to shore up that position player depth. And that's exactly what we saw happen, bringing in Troy Tulowitzki a few years ago. Granted, you know, in a time machine, it's hard to look at, you know, what we gave up and see where we're at now. But he was crucial in that 2015 run as well. So who knows? It's one of those things, I guess.
Once upon a time, this organization gave up a player that would end up having a near Hall of Fame career in Jeff Kent in order to go for it, and it worked out. I mean, Dow, isn't history very fickle that way, that sometimes you just go for it and it doesn't work out? And did that factor into Rogers' mentality when they decided to go with Shapiro and ultimately not retain AA? I'm wondering, was there a fear that there's going to be a gap now? We're going to have a developmental gap because we've traded away all those pitchers that we've developed for stars who can play today, and now we're well behind position player expectations for maturity.
Well, I'm not sure that the equation was one between Alex and Shapiro. I mean, I do think that what they thought that they were going to get was Shapiro and Alex, and you know, and I think that does maybe speak to the fact that they maybe hadn't really looked at it that closely and thought it through and thought of how this was going to play out. But then again, when they hired Shapiro, remember, the Blue Jays were under 500 and were kind of looking like a disappointing team in 2015. I remember in May of 2015 walking around downtown Toronto talking with a member of the press corps that surrounds the Blue Jays, and we were sort of looking at it like, is tomorrow the day that Gibby gets cut loose? Is it the day after? So I guess bringing it back to your question, I'm not sure. I don't think that anyone would hand back the experience that we had in 2015 and to some extent in 2016. And you know, I think I was probably the scolding auntie who everybody hates, who was saying, well, one of these days this is going to come back and bite us in the ass. And I guess it kind of has, you know, but I actually don't think that this team has to go and spend years off in the wilderness trying to rebuild. I think that there's a way for them to be able to both build what we always wanted to, which was a long-term sustainable team, a long-term sustainable talent system that was going to feed through to the major leagues and be perpetually competitive. But at the same time, I think that they can also do that and pull together a team that, like, is a true talent 85-win team. And if they go on a good streak and July 31st comes along and they're right in it, or maybe can see that they can win, then fine, like sell off and go for it. But I don't know. I mean, I mean, you have to give something to get something, and that's sort of where I think that this team is. But having said that, I mean, take a look at all the players who they gave up. I mean, it's, you know, Daniel Norris is a project right now in Detroit.
Yep.
You know, there's very few of those guys who you can look back at and say, wow, that's a guy that I wish we had. And even someone like Miguel Castro, who is with the Orioles now, I took a look at him over the last couple of days, and when he comes in, you'd say, man, it'd be nice to have that guy still in our bullpen. But you know what? He got let go by the Rockies, who the Blue Jays traded him to. So yeah, mm-hmm. Baseball is fickle, and you know, most years you're going to end up going home disappointed for one reason or another. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe people should get into tennis. Maybe that's the answer.
I know Chris and I have different philosophies.
No, I was just going to say, I just wanted to clarify too. I wouldn't trade the experience of 2015 and 16 back for any of it by any means. Especially, like you say, the players that we traded for Tulowitzki and for David Price, while they were great prospects and while there's still some potential that they'll work out, it hasn't been like we've traded away Noah Syndergaard. And even him, I mean, he's been on the disabled list all year as well for the most part. So it's, it's tough when you feel like you maybe traded away the world, but it's not as bad as it maybe feels like some days.
I mean, I've had discussions with Ari. I think Alex Anthopoulos is, and this is just my personal opinion, I think he probably knew he was going to be out the door. I think he said, screw it, I'm going to go for it all, and if that means I'm going to trade the farm system that I built up, so be it. But, this might be my last year, so I'm going to go for it. And I don't blame him. And again, yeah, the 2015 and 2016 were really, really excited. And if you're going to go for it, don't be half pregnant, go all the way in. And I've said to Ari on numerous occasions, I said, I just fear that the Jays are going to sell all of their prospects and end up like the Philadelphia Phillies, you know, where 5 years they're just going to stink and have to rebuild that farm system, rebuild the talent pool. And, Philadelphia went for it and about a decade ago, and they're still paying for it. So, hey, it got Pat Gillick into the Hall of Fame, but... sometimes you got to make those sacrifices, and I can build a starting staff from all the pitchers that Alex Anthopoulos traded away, but we still have some pretty good ones in Stroman and Sanchez.
I don't think it's a worthwhile analogy to use Pat Gillick as an example, considering that Pat Gillick spent a better part of the 80s trying to develop the farm system, as we know. And I think at the end, I agree with you that the mentality was, okay, I might lose my job soon. Management, ownership is expecting results. The fans are expecting results. He pulled the trigger, made the trades, great things happen. But sometimes, I think you'll agree, Chris, it's not the decisions we make that we come to regret, but it's the ones that we don't make. And can the four of us here agree right now that the decision not to sign Edwin, irrespective of whether or not you were from the camp that believed that he played too hard to get, or that the organization didn't want him back as originally intended, Chris, is that now looking back at him with all of his prosperity and the 21-game winning streak in Cleveland, which is so just, it's unfathomable for me to even digest what that means, considering we're celebrating a 5-game winning streak. Chris, should we not have signed him and avoided this whole Pierce-Kendrys Morales experiment in the first place?
You know what? My answer might surprise you, but I truly believe that us not re-signing in Encarnacion was a blessing in disguise. And that's not to say that I really do think that. And the reason I say that is because I don't think Justin Smoke gets full-time at-bats this season if we had re-signed. And whether or not Steve Pierce is in the equation or not, I just don't think Justin Smoke would have been given the opportunity that he was given. And considering that... we've got Smoke under contract for a little over $4 million next year with an option for $6 million the year following. When Cleveland's still going to be paying Edwin $20 million a year, I don't think Edwin would have been the difference maker this year. And it's not to say that he wouldn't have made a tremendous impact on the team. He certainly would have. But I don't know that we would have Justin Smoke and have him for the bargain that we do. And I can't, the version of me in April was hearing me say this now, he'd be just like freaking out. But I honestly think that would be the case. And having another $20 million contract on the payroll wouldn't necessarily be helpful, even if Encarnacion is still a tremendous asset.
I mean, Ari, I was on record at the beginning of the year that I thought Kendrys Morales and Edwin Encarnacion would have similar numbers at the end of the year. I mean, obviously Edwin has a little more power and RBI numbers, but I mean their averages they're 10 points off, but obviously Edwin is on a more competitive team, which certainly helps your numbers. But I think getting Morales at $11 million versus the $20 million with Edwin, you know, on paper it looked good. I'm just not sure if it affected chemistry.
I do think that there is some legitimacy to the comment about the fact that, you know, it's entirely possible that maybe they walk away from Justin Smoke at the end of spring training if they had Edwin back and they had a roster crunch. So, you know, if the equation is between Justin Smoke and Edwin and Encarnacion, then I do think that, you know, the Blue Jays have made out okay, you know, that they, that for, you know, 2 more years and $10 million total, they've got a guy who's really looked much better and like a much, like a player who's taken a significant step forward. But, you know, and Ari, I think I probably said this to you before. I forget if it was, if we were recording or not, but, you know, you look at this team with Edwin instead of Kendrys and Dexter Fowler instead of Jose Bautista, and that's a really different team. Now, mind you, I'm not sure that you can do that and have Steve Pierce, but even then, I mean, I think you'd give up Steve Pierce to be able to have those two guys. I don't even remember. I know Dexter Fowler got off to a bad start, so maybe he isn't the sort of magic elixir that this team needed. But, you know, I was Team Kendrys right out of the gate and thought that he was going to be something that Blue Jays fans would come around to love. And now I'm kind of dreading the idea of 2 more years of Kendrys Morales, unless we can somehow convince the Oakland A's to maybe take him off our hands while we pay for him or something along those lines.
I mean, I predicted at the beginning of this year he was going to be a between 260, 270 hitter. He was going to be a 30 home run, 100 RBI guy. I mean, his RBIs are behind, but he's still going to hit 30 home runs, and that's what you pay for. You pay for the power.
Well, and unfortunately his speed, and his lack of speed, rather, is magnified by the way the team plays baseball station to station. Kendrys Morales on a balanced team where you've got contact hitters in front of him and maybe behind him is a radically different hitter. I mean, the one thing I think we can all agree is that the Blue Jays' plan to have switch hitters make an impact, for the most part, worked out beautifully this year. I loved watching games where Smoke and Morales were hitting back-to-back and basically forcing pitchers and managers to adjust to them. And when both of them are going, as was the case with Smoke throughout most of the year and Kendrys in the early part of the year, there was this real sense that you had some kind of a progressive lineup. Now, of course, with the injuries and the depression and underachievement of many players, it's like a carnival of lost souls, I told an industry friend a few days ago, and he laughed because it just sounded like something out of some kind of weird, really bad, you know, science fiction novel. This was a plan that clearly didn't work this year, Dow. Now, looking to next year and appreciating the fact that chemistry, we talked about chemistry just a few moments ago, this is going to be a 2018 team that looks to have the same leadership group intact, specifically a Tulowitzki, a Martin, and a Donaldson. Does that at least give maybe you some solace in thinking that, hey, with those three stewards leading them, with those three bannermen, that young kids and young, you know, rookies will rally around them and perhaps learn how to play a better brand of competitive baseball for these suffering fans?
I don't know. I mean, chemistry is a really hard thing to nail down. And, you know, sometimes there's a notion that there's a lack of maturity. And I don't know. I'm getting to that point in my life where I'm a cranky old guy, and I can tell what you know, three cranky old guys in a room could do if things aren't going well or going right. So, you know, I don't know that absolutely saying, well, there's the veteran presence that's going to sort of steer the ship. You know, sometimes I look at a team like the Astros, and you know, they've had their ups and downs and struggles, and so has everybody. I mean, God, the Dodgers, like, everyone's looking at the Dodgers now, the team that has the most wins in Major League Baseball, and everyone's certain this team is just about to flame out. Like, every team stinks for long periods of time, or for at least periods of time in the run of the baseball season. That's the sort of mercilessness of baseball. But you know, do I think that the that a strong, stable veteran presence is going to guide this team forward? Not really. I don't. I actually don't think that's what's going to get the Blue Jays to the next phase where they need to be. I think it's going to be a group of emerging young talents who come up together, who have a level of guidance, but who are really sort of self-driven people. And that's part of the stuff that I love hearing about Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero, is that these guys are smart guys. There was a comment that Bo Bichette made in that Baseball America article about them that just it had maturity about hitting that I don't think that I've heard from, you know, a whole number of these Cowboys who the Blue Jays bring in, like Pilar or Lori or Aaron Sebia or whoever, who just think that they're just going to like grip and rip their way through a major league career, and you see what's happening to these guys. So, I think maturity doesn't necessarily come with age, and sometimes there's a fine line between wisdom and cynicism, and I think that what I foresee is a Blue Jays team that is a bunch of the emerging talents who come up together, who like playing together, and who want to win together.
I agree with you, Dal. And you know, and further to that point, I think if there's not enough leadership in this room already, you know, guys like Russell Martin were brought in, and that was a big part of why he was brought in. We need to solidify the catching position, but you know, the biggest thing flying his flag when he came in was that every team he was on made it to the playoffs for years, and that certainly was the case for the first 2 years that he was here as well. So there should be more than enough veteran voices in the room, and you brought up the example of the Astros as well. That's a young group, and while they do have a few key veterans, you know, there should be more than enough leadership in this clubhouse to get it done. And if there isn't, well, then that's when changes are made, and these new groups come up and reset things, and the next generation takes over.
I'm just hoping it's something a little more simpler. I think once the pitching staff gets reorganized and can pitch consistently without any injuries, I'm hoping all the other things will fall into place, because we still next year under contract still have three really good competent pitchers in Sanchez, Stroman, and Happ. They need to be healthy all year. Can't have Sanchez next year on the DL. Short periods here and there, spot starts is no big deal, but he's got to pitch consistently next year, and those three pitchers need to set the tone for the whole season.
Well, we'll certainly see what happens, and when we as lovers of this game see teams both succeed and fail, we learn a lot from them. I'm looking at these Cleveland Indians, and I'm thinking to myself, they found the piece they needed, 21-game winning streak, outscoring opponents 139-35, which when you process from a baseball perspective, makes you appreciate, again, to your point, Dal, what a merciless season it can be. The highs and the lows. This was a year of consistent frustration for the fans. We can only hope that management reads into the mentality, the psyche of some of this frustration, and starts prescribing the kinds of solutions that make fans, the real fans, appreciate what this team is capable of in the years to come. Let's go around the table now and talk about what you gentlemen are up to and where my listening audience can find you on social media. Let's go with Chris, Jeff, and then Dal.
As always, you can find my work at jaysjournal.com. We've got a lot of great writers, including Mr. R. Spiro, that do contributions on a daily or weekly basis. You can you can find me on Twitter at Baseball4Brains, and it's baseball number four and then brains. I'm going to be working on a piece, finishing it up tonight, just talking about a prediction of what kind of contract demands Marco Estrada might be looking at coming into this offseason. So that's you can always follow us there and look forward to that one.
I myself, you can find me on Twitter at GFalbo13. I just do freelance work. Nothing specific, like to keep my options open.
For me, more often than not, you'll find me on Twitter, although I've kind of laid off lately. I have a an Instagram account, which again is at Dow Steve. There are three photos on it, and I don't know why I have this account, but apparently that was an idea that I had one day. And aside from that, Fridays at Rogers Sportsnet. Nobody calls it Rogers Sportsnet. I don't know. Sorry. So Fridays at Sportsnet. I have a column usually in the early afternoon. So you can enjoy that on a patio with your friends, or you can read it before them and pass all my good ideas off as your own.
You have been listening to the Jays Journal Roundtable Podcast with three brilliant baseball minds, Jeff Falbo of DeepLeagues.com, Chris Henderson of Jays Journal, and Dow Steve of Rogers Sportsnet. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. Have a good one.
Pleasure's always
yours. Thanks,
all right.